Do you like to be the first? Name of your sex tape? Well, if you like to be the first to listen to podcasts, you might want to check out our Patreon, because now we're offering a brand new membership tier called Name of Your Sex Tape. I couldn't help it, guys. I'm sorry. For £5 a month, you'll get an ad-free version of our weekly episode on a Tuesday, a full day earlier than its usual release. So you can be the very first to talk about how funny our guest was, how quickly you cracked the case, or how badly I answered a question. Plus, you'll get all the benefits of our regular tier, including our live Zoom records, a special shout out on the podcast, and if you really like to hear us talk, we've got an entire back catalog of extra content. Check it out on patreon.com/drunkwomensolvingcrime.
Name of your sex tape. Name of your sex tape.
Name of your sex tape.
Fancy coming along to see Drunk Women Solving Crime live?
Ooh, yes, please.
Why not join us for our monthly London residency at the marvellous Museum of Comedy? We've got monthly shows through to June.
Plus, every show is a double header, so you get to see us record not one, but two episodes with two fantastic guests.
You can find tickets on our website, drunkwomensolvingcrime.com.
Shows are selling out fast, so be quick.
Noice.
Noice.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Drunk women solving.
Is Drunk Women Solving Crime. My name's Katie Wilkins and I'm an author and comedian. I'm joined by screenwriter Hannah George.
Hello.
And writer-comedian Taylor Glenn.
Hello.
This is where brandy meets bludgeoning, mimosa meets misdemeanor, and port meets prostitution. It's a true crime podcast with a twist of lime. Coming up on Drunk Women Solving Crime.
Sorry, that sounds really funny.
I know shame.
I guess the most frightening thing in the world is those narrow country roads.
Like, there's no orgies for soft power.
No. Now it's time for Drunk Women Solving Crime.
Welcome to another episode of Drunk Women Solving Crime. I am so excited to introduce our guest this week. It is the fantastic comedian Al Murray.
Yay!
Cheers.
Cheers.
I'm saying that in my normal voice rather than going cheers. I'm going cheers.
Yeah.
I'm him. I'm not him. I'm me.
You're the real Al Murray.
Yeah, the real, the behind the mask. Yeah.
Yeah, oh, that's good.
Yeah. Although that's I look good. Exactly the same, obviously.
Yes,
and share many of his views.
This is exciting because this is the first Men's Month recording that we're doing. I don't know if it'll be the first one released, so this might be out of order, but this is the first official recording.
Well, I'm humbled and shocked in equal measure. Thanks for having me. What a privilege. What an honour.
No, it's great because that Al Murray, the pub landlord, I mean, it sounds like it would be a good fit for this podcast with us all drinking, but actually I'm glad that you're the real Al Murray.
No, because he'd already be on at you about...
He would.
What's that corally anus poster behind Hannah? He'd be like, oh, you like a bit of anus, do you? I mean, it would be so boring.
At least now the listeners know how highbrow I am.
Well, exactly. You see, that would be his brilliant double handed signal to let everyone know how highbrow you are and how lowbrow he is. You get a double whammy off Coriolanus. But there we go.
No, that's good. That's good.
The less said, the better about that.
All right, we'll move on. And I won't even mention that my name is spelt the French way.
Yeah, yeah, that's just not even opening
that can of worms.
Please, no.
So we have one question for our guests on this podcast. Have you ever been the victim of a crime?
Well, you know, I thought long and hard about this when I was in the very long protracted research chat that goes ahead of this podcast. I just want to let the listeners know that this is there's a really long, detailed favourite colour type research chat before you're invited on this show. And then if you get that wrong, you're not allowed on. But yes, I have. I think I've been a victim of several crimes, actually, when I think about
it. Okay, yeah.
A flat early on when I was in London, or a shared house got burgled.
Oh.
And and then one of my flatmates completely rode the insurance claim.
Oh, wow.
So it was like two crimes were committed.
And
And I still don't know which one was worse. Because, you know, the burglar got away with some cufflinks, I think. And then... The insurance claimant, I think, garnered a couple of guitars out of...
I should point out to our listeners right now that Al is sat in front of five separate guitars
It wasn't me. This happened to a friend of mine. It's one of those stories, but it really did. Anyway, or it happened to a guy I was sharing a house with. Anyway, I think the most recent straight-up crime was, you know, I park my car in the street because I live in London. The bit of London I live in might be expensive, but there's nowhere to park your car, so you park
There's no off-road parking.
So when you're doing the insurance, you tick the thing that says no off-road parking. So you park in the street. And one time, someone drove it through a street, probably in a lorry, a bin lorry or something, and scraped down the entire side of my car.
Oh, no.
Bending the door out of shape so it wouldn't shut properly.
Oh, jeez.
That's and then, more than a scrape.
And then was gone.
Oh, jeez.
That just feels like the worst thing in the world because, you know, why not leave a note? I mean, if they're insured, who cares? You end up with that thing of, well, we're not allowed nice things.
This is why we can't have nice things.
Exactly.
People will scrape and run.
Exactly. They'll scrape and run. And it cost me an awful lot of money to have fixed.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
Yeah. And then someone, you know, like 3 weeks later, crashed into the car in the same place.
Shit. Oh, no.
Now, I mean, I don't want to victim blame Al, but I'm kind of thinking, how are you parking this vehicle? Because
just outside my house. And the problem where I live, wherever you park, the trees all up the street, wherever you park your car, it gets shat on.
Right?
By birds. Yeah. And there's the West London parakeets.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And when they decide to sit in the tree outside my house and download on my car.
No.
I mean, there's another crime. There's another crime that I've suffered.
Avian criminals now.
Exactly. I mean, but you can't take parakeets to court, can you?
You say that. We once had a case.
Oh, yeah, we did.
They used to take animals to court.
We don't have time to get into that. Yeah, that's the whole other thing.
There's a film about called The Hour of the Pig about a pig.
Yes.
With a young Colin Firth.
A young Colin Firth, yeah.
It's funny, though, isn't it? Because, ironically, your car should be the luckiest fucking car in the world.
It's supposed to be shat on, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And it absolutely is not. Also, the other thing, if your car's shat on often by birds, you end up having this inevitable conversation where you try to sell it and they go, oh dear, you know, you should have done something about that. What? And then they go, oh, the paint used to be bird shit resistance, but, you know, the EU. And you're like,
oh, wow.
What about it? Please tell me how the EU stopped the bird shit resistant paint.
Of course it did.
You're thinking, oh, well, yeah, exactly. Of course it did. It more fooled me for buying a car within the EU at the top. Anyway, the point is...
an amazing conspiracy theory. I had not heard that one.
Well, nor had I. But if you had a car that was shat on frequently, you'd know this. This is the... There's obviously, like... There's some of us who know this, some of us who don't.
Yeah, I live on a shit street, so I understand. And it just becomes this thing in the morning. And my daughter, who's 8, thinks it's fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
The worse it is in the morning, she's like, yay!
Yeah.
What does she like about it?
She just thinks it's hilarious.
Well,
she thinks it's funny because we get so wound up about it.
Yeah.
And she's sort of like, why don't you do something about it? And we're like, we have to park on our street. What do you do? We're not going to chop the trees down.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing you could do about it was vote leave, it would seem.
Get that paint back. Yeah.
That explains the gap, the 52, 58, whatever it was. Yeah. I know those, the cursed numbers.
They all had shit cars.
Exactly. The cars were shat on. That's it. I'm out of here.
Yeah, wow. it wasn't even about the NHS or immigration. No, it was about the bird shit.
That was right. The underground campaign that went right over my head.
Yeah. Oh, man. Oh, God. Well, we always ask our guests, like, what if you had the perp, what would you say? Now, so you've got a few perps. They're in custody. They either can or can't see you. You can hit them. You could talk to them. What do you want to say?
I would, if it's the parakeets, obviously, I'd sleep deprive them. Like, I want to know what a parakeet that hasn't had any sleep is like. Like, so we're talking bright lights.
Oh, my God.
And the sounds of mewling cats, right, to really, like...
Okay.
Wind them up and freak them out. And then I think what you do with parakeets is good cat, bad cat. So one cat would go in and just look at them and drink milk. And then another cat would basically chase them around the room and freak them out.
Wow, while they're being sleep deprived.
Because, you know, these little bastards have ruined more than two cars that I've owned. But if I got the bloke with the lorry, I don't know, I think I'd sit down and have a sort of sad conversation with him. Like a thing more, you know, more in sorrow than in anger. One of those conversations, but that would probably turn into an angry conversation. But you try and start
constructive.
You know, I mean, I've had teenagers. Fortunately, they're not teenagers anymore, so everything's all right. But while they're teenagers, you do try and do that in sorrow rather than anger conversation. It always starts in sorrow.
Yeah. Now, anger and sadness are so close together, though.
But, yeah, they're good pals, aren't they? But. The lorry
From
driver.
Sorrow to anger. This feels like a parenting book on the way for you, Al. I don't know what you have on the horizon, but this has legs. This really does. Well,
I hadn't thought of it like that, but yeah, I mean, they turned out all right. I could write a book, couldn't I? You know, eventually, just say it's called The Eventual Adult. I think it's what you call it.
That's a great
eventually
name
they turn into adults. It's just a question of, you know, how patient you are saying this, and they listen to the show, so there we go. They'll enjoy that bit.
But a big shout out
big shout out to Scarlett and Willow who are sitting behind the Wizard of Oz curtain of my parenting skills.
They're thinking, oh, I know the conversation he's talking about before he started shouting.
They absolutely are. They absolutely are. And they're thinking, there wasn't a sorrow bit first. There was just anger. You know, the bloke who scraped my lorry, he doesn't care. He's in a hurry.
Yeah.
You know, blah, blah.
And people are such dicks too.
Yes,
like,
yes.
We're in the countryside, but like the narrow roads might as well be like where I used to live in London. Because if someone's a dickhead, you're all trapped. And then the traffic just mounts behind you and everyone's beeping.
Yeah.
I'm more scared of country lanes in this country than anywhere else. Like, because I've driven in London a lot and it can get a little bit hairy and people are not the most considerate. But a country lane is terrifying because you can tell that the locals are just ready to fuck with you.
Oh,
they're so narrow. Even to a non-American. Like, I know I'm biased and I'm like, where are the wide roads? I can't do this. But Jesus. Terrifying. What a note to end on.
Yes.
In conclusion.
Crimes are bad, but country roads are worse.
Yes, I think if only we could arrest country roads.
I love this on Men's Month. It's kind of, I guess the most frightening thing in the world is those narrow country roads.
But also inevitably, I'm talking about driving and I've managed to I'm being sort of tediously top gear and go, well, you know, obviously like on a country road, I tend to force the other guy back up to the passing point.
Also, it was me that brought up country.
Yes, it was actually. Yes, sorry. Yeah, I apologise. You're right, Jeremy Clarkson.
I'm the, oh God, Clarkson. Let's move on. I'd be the slowest one on that racetrack they used to do.
I've done that once.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's a humiliating experience because you get you go around it twice with the racing. The racing driver takes you around twice. Then you go around it twice with the racing driver, sat next to you going, brake now! And you're thinking, well, I braked 100 yards ago, you fool. Right? And then you go around on your own a couple of times. It's awful.
Yeah.
It's just awful. I'm not particularly interested in going really quickly. I'm not much fussed about that.
It looks like it's more stressful than a country road.
I think it could be.
Now it's time. For Drunk Women Solving Crime.
So today we are going to be talking about a con man who pretended to be many things, including...
the best kind of con man.
Well, yes.
The con man who was brave enough to be himself all the time. Yeah.
Is that not the ultimate con?
Well, yes. Please. I mean, you tread softly for your tread on my identity.
True enough.
So this guy pretended to be a naval surgeon, a civil engineer, a sheriff's deputy, a prison warden, a doctor of applied psychology, a hospital orderly, a lawyer, a childcare expert, a Benedictine monk, a Trappist monk, an editor, a cancer researcher, and a teacher.
God, who has the time?
I know, it's so much effort.
Wow.
That's a real range, to say the least.
I mean, it is a range.
Just doing that on Twitter would be enough effort.
Yeah, that's someone's Twitter bio that you're just like, ugh, I'm exhausted.
Yeah. How do I say all of that in 180 characters?
Oh my God, I just answered as the monk. I'm so embarrassed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The Trappist one never replies. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, only one of these cons led to a prison sentence.
Oh.
Is it worth me asking you which one do you think led to a prison sentence? I'd have to repeat
them.
Absolutely.
I think so.
Okay, yeah. You want to guess which one led to a prison sentence?
Yeah, because I'm really curious, because is it about the severity of it? Like, so one of them was a surgeon, right? You said surgeon somewhere in there. So if something went catastrophically wrong, if he actually performed surgeries, is it something like that? Or is it more of a fluke situation where he's an orderly, but someone's pissed off with him? Do you know what I mean?
I hear you. Katie. Okay. Yeah. Do you want me to repeat the jobs or can you remember?
Yeah, please. All the jobs again.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Naval surgeon, civil engineer, sheriff's deputy, assistant prison warden, doctor of applied psychology, hospital orderly, a lawyer, a childcare expert, a Benedictine monk, a Trappist monk, an editor, a cancer researcher, and a teacher. Which one of these impersonations led to him spending some jail time?
Wow.
Teacher
from Al Murray?
What's your thinking behind it? Did he like try and get free school meals for too many people?
And just really harsh.
Yeah, I think I don't know. The homework he set was too difficult.
All the parents complained.
And the parents got smelt a rat and thought, hang on a minute, he isn't really a teacher. Or didn't set any homework. It's such an array.
Mm. I mean, it's so open. Like, it's a
Did
hard
Did you say
question.
Lawyer? Yeah. Lawyer was in
Yes,
there.
Lawyer
I'm gonna
is
go
in
with,
there.
I'm going to go with lawyer.
Okay. Lawyer from Taylor, Hannah George.
I think you said somewhere in there, like, cancer researcher.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the kind of thing.
That's well dodge, innit?
I mean, it's like, it's all fun and games, like going into a school and going like, oh, let's do some PE. But, you know what I mean? Like,
that's literally not a real fun and games.
Thank you to all teachers.
You get into proper trouble, don't you, if you say you're offering cancer cures or cancer research.
Yeah,
this is true.
Now you get into actual real total hot water. But this also sounds like a time when this isn't the 80s. This is...
We will get to the year in a minute.
It just feels like, you know, naval surge, because that sort of puts us in a maritime age, doesn't it? Rather than...
Does that not mean just a stomach surgeon? No, <I'm
joking. laughs> A belly button expert.
So he does piercings? Yeah. So I'm going to say this is the 90s, because the piercings were just so big then.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't think it was lawyer, actually, because real lawyers don't go to jail much.
Okay, so just to recap, final answers are teacher, lawyer, and cancer research.
I'm going to go with the surgeon. That was my first instinct. Mm. Yeah.
Well, the first point goes to Al Murray.
Hey!
It was teacher. Yeah.
Really?
Okay.
It is a thankless job even to pretend to be.
Yeah.
Shout out to all the teachers. We're so grateful.
I think they would agree.
It's not the perfect crime, is it, to pretend to want to, or even a desirable crime. Is it? What evil super brain is sat in their lair, twiddling their moustache, going, and today, I shall take the lower six through
some Machiavellian.
And at no point should I be paid what I'm supposed to be paid.
I want to be paid below average. Get paid less than I deserve.
And have no respect whatsoever.
Brilliant con. It's an excellent point. And to be fair, it does link back to the answer links back to something that Taylor said, which is that might not be specifically a, well, it is a crime because he wasn't a real teacher, but he was at that job when he was arrested.
Okay.
It's just when everything caught up with him then.
Yes. Anyway, we'll get to that.
All right.
Interesting. We are going to be talking about the great imposter himself, Ferdinand Waldo Demara, or Fred to his mates. Now, I was worried he was a bit too famous, and I know Al knows a lot about history. Have you heard of him, Al?
No.
Fantastic.
Was there a film?
There is. I'm assuming you two idiots know nothing. Oh, God, do you know?
I don't know much about the story, and I haven't seen the film, but isn't it a Tony Curtis film?
Yes.
Is this what Where's Waldo is based on?
I don't know.
Where is he now? What the fuck is he doing now?
The moment you say Tony Curtis, I'm thinking the Vikings. He's in the Vikings.
He's not pretending to be a Viking.
He is a Viking in the Vikings.
This is also going to help you now to
some
guess.
Some like
the
it
year.
Fake. That took too long to make it. Cut that out, Amanda. Oh my God, the shame. I'm joking.
So
I've been drinking. I had a martini. I don't normally have those, but I just really wanted one.
But they're so good.
Okay, Katie, go. Right. Spin your tail.
I thought you were going to go a bit more, so I'm going to drink more.
Oh.
Right, so we're talking about the great imposter, Ferdinand Waldo Demara, or Fred to his mates. I'm going to call him Fred. I consider myself a mate at this point. Now, he was said to possess an extremely high IQ and a photographic memory. Fred was born into a well-to-do Massachusetts family. His dad, Ferdinand Waldo Demara Sr., was well off and owned lots of theatres, and he made his living as a motion picture operator.
A bit of drama in the family.
Yes. What decade are we starting in when motion pictures was big business?
20s.
20s from Al Murray.
Same.
20s from Taylor. Glenn. I'm going to second name everybody. Hannah George.
As the history guy, I feel like we need to go with, 1920s. Let's do it.
Fantastic. You are all correct.
Yes, knew it.
It is the roaring 20s.
So it's prohibition. So no wonder he's doing lots of sort of criminal hoo-ha.
Well, this is it. To give you a bit more context. So Fred is born in 1921. Into this lovely, wealthy family. But the Great Depression destroyed the sweet setup that he arrived into. Okay. So in the 30s, Waldo Sr. becomes insolvent and the family have to move from a fancy bit of town to a poor bit of town when Fred is 16. So my question is, how does Fred react to this situation?
Joins the Navy.
Excellent. Any advance on that?
Really good guess. How old is he now? If he's born in 21, the crash is...
And he's 16.
I think he's probably doing the thing that you do, like, surely when you... Like, when I left the Isle of Wight for university, I was like, I'm gonna...
Sorry, that sounds really funny. That sounds like other people left the Isle of Wight for other reasons, but you had to come up with something, like, really, like, super legit, otherwise no one would believe you.
I went as far, ladies and gentlemen, as Southampton. So when I took that 22-minute journey...
Oh, God, I love it. Oh, I have a friend who went to, you know, he did his A-levels in Portsmouth from the Isle of Wight, went to technical college, you know. I just love it. Okay, sorry. I shouldn't laugh. Southampton's a great university. Oh, God, this is so terrible.
It's as far as we like to go on the island, you know, just baby steps. But it is that thing. It's like you're over a stretch of water and you sort of slightly, you rebrand yourself a little
bit. You're
like, I'm no longer the Hannah that was, you know, at middle school and got chewing gum put in her hair. I'm Hannah that goes to university and gets chewing gum put in her hair.
It's classy, a chewing gum.
My feeling for Fred is that he goes there, and although his social status has declined, I feel like this is the first con. The first con is he goes out there in his new neighbourhood and he's still saying, I am the big, the rich guy. I come from this rich family. He never admits, I don't think, to the fact that his family...
Lovely. Yeah. Okay.
I made that entirely about me, you might have noticed.
No, so. That's great. I like it. Taylor Glenn.
Relatable.
Taylor, how do you think Fred reacts to having to move to the poor part of town and his family?
I think he reacts really badly. I think this is his trauma. I think this is the moment that breaks him, but I don't think he's necessarily going to show it in a conventional way. But the fact that we know that this man goes on to masquerade as all these other characters would suggest that maybe it had an adverse effect.
Sure.
He almost combines this drama background with this fall from grace, and that's when it begins. So I mean, a bit what Hannah says, maybe he goes right into his first persona. Yeah.
Well, you guys are all on the right tracks. None of you have quite got it. The first thing he does is he goes to join the Cistercian monks on Rhode Island.
So not the Navy. He actually is a monk?
He goes to... This is the thing. It looks like he actually is a monk because he's there for several years. A lot of my sources described it as it's after this that he starts conning, which makes it sound like he was a real monk.
That feels legit.
Let's say he goes to be a monk because he believes it and because it's solace and it's escape.
Yeah.
And then he realizes it's bullshit. You know what I mean? And you think, well, and he thinks, well, anyone will believe anything. Look what I believed.
Right.
I might as well dig into this idea of what will people believe? What will they put themselves through?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. He like draws on it because it's obviously perhaps comforting him for a while and then he outgrows it.
And is he still in the States?
Yeah,
so he's like a
Rhode
American
Island
monk.
They should really
rename their sports teams that.
I mean, are there monks in America? I mean, I know very little about America.
I always feel like you've got to go to another...
I mean, it's cultural appropriation.
Monks feel European or South American, right?
That's exactly what I was going to say. I feel like you have to go to South America or you go to...
Or Tibet.
But here's the thing,
or Spain or...
But here's the thing about America. Thanks to television, I know more about high school... than the school my children went to. I know about that you hang around by the lockers, that you get wedgied by the lockers, that the mean girls come through and bully people, and the dweebs and nerds all meet together and are friends with the science teacher, and that there's a prom. I know all this from American television. This is a reflection on me as much as anything else. maybe it's entirely a reflection on me, but you know what I mean? We're so bombarded with what American school life is like.
It's true. It's quite the obsession in culture.
Yeah.
It's a shame there was never like a movie about like the head quarterback who wanted to become a monk, and then we'd know more about it.
Where's that gritty drama?
Absolutely. Oh my God. And then he goes to the prom because he leaves and he's in his cloak. Oh, that'd be beautiful.
Oh God, that'd be amazing, wouldn't it? He goes to the prom and they think he's in fancy dress. He's he's back, isn't he?
Yeah.
Papal attraction. That's what we call it.
Papal attraction.
Okay, we can pitch this later.
Okay.
My next question is...
We're all going to lose our virginity. Well, I'm not.
Exactly. And then he changes his mind.
Yeah.
Oh, hang on a minute. What am I doing?
Wait, she fancies me. I'm going to do
it. Now, that's what I call higher purpose.
Like, was it John Hughes meets
don't
American
worry.
Pie?
I've already been don't worry, I've already been forgiven. Yes.
He's got all the lines. My question is, what or why makes him leave the monks?
Oh.
So there's an actual reason that we know.
Well, you can tell me why you think he leaves or what he goes on to do next, because it's chicken and egg.
Accused of embezzlement.
Okay.
I like to think perhaps it is love and he falls in love with someone, which means that he has to leave. And then he wants to impress this woman, perhaps, or perhaps he's told this woman too many lies. He's gone like, a surgeon. Yes, I am. A teacher. Oh, yeah. So I think he's gone on a first date and he's really panicked in those first few moments.
I've always wanted to date a lawyer or a doctor. I'm both.
Or if he's 16 in 1937, he's 20, 21 in 1941.
Yes.
Is he conscripted?
Ding, ding, ding. Now, I don't know if he's conscripted, but he does join the US Army.
Right. What year?
1941, you're absolutely on the money.
So they're still volunteering then. They're not quite into conscription in 41.
See, this is great history knowledge.
Yeah.
Yes.
But loads of people start joining up because they can see the way it's going. During 41, there's a slide out of isolationism and towards an acceptance that there's going to be a war.
Wait, okay. But the Americans didn't join until like 1957 or something.
Shut up,
Kate. Oh, she went there. That's a
sick burn. Beautiful.
It's a sick
burn. The sickest burn of all. Yeah, you came in late, woo, and then won it. Oh, yeah, anyway.
We came late, but we brought the good champagne.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So they were separating the men. Forgiven.
While we were drinking tea. Yeah. So he joins the army. Okay.
He joins the army, and it's said that this is the start of his career in imposture. The first thing he does is he nicks the name and identity of an army buddy called Anthony Ignolia, and then he goes AWOL. Ooh. So everyone is blaming, you know, slagging off Anthony, and he didn't even do anything. And it's a bit like if I ever get arrested, I'm going to say my name's Hannah George. So my question,
Taylor,
is,
do you feel like left out as a result of that?
Well, now I do.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll say that I'm Taylor Glenn, and Taylor, you say that you're Kate Morgan.
Yeah, we'll make a pact. Everybody wins.
Yay, best friends club. Right. So,
female workplace.
So, my question is, where does Fred run off to when absent without official leave?
Where would one go?
Because he's joining
the army. Is this when he goes to be a Trappist monk?
Oh my God, yes, it is. I'm not even going to let the others answer. Yeah,
How do you know that?
Well, because that's what you do, isn't it? Let's say there's a war on, and you want to avoid you join the army, and you think, actually, hang on a minute, there's a possibility I might get killed.
Oh, it's serious, yeah.
So you know how to be a monk. You join an order where they can't ask you your name.
Okay.
What's that Channel 4 show where they chase you around the country?
Hunted.
You just go to a Trappist order, don't you?
Okay. I'll be honest, I really only know about Trappist ale.
Yeah, fine.
This is a good life hack.
So they can't ask you your name. So you've got sort of an immunity.
So you arrive and you say your brother Alan. Or you say you're Katie Herring. You turn up and you say that, whoever you are, they can't ask you.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. No, it's good. And also, it's sort of a bit like go back to what you know. Like, there's actually, when I was first reading about this, I was like, I don't get why he's done that. But actually, you've made me think that actually makes a lot more sense. He's in and out of monasteries for a bit, He joins the Navy.
Right.
And he trains as a hospital corpsman, which... it's not, as I first assumed, anything to do with corpses. It's the Marine Corps. So he's trained
as a
medical...
Isn't it a corpsman?
Yeah, he's like a medical specialist. He gives medical care, typically in battlefields. He's like a first aider kind of gig.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he doesn't reach the position that he wanted at this job because he wanted the medic corner office. So he wants to leave because he feels like he's not being treated well enough or appreciated.
Having already absconded on a fake identity and hidden as a monk.
Yes.
I mean, you know, give a guy a break.
Yeah, yeah, right. So my question is, how does he get out of this one?
I mean, I guess he could just leave the Navy, right? He could just be like, but
just,
he doesn't
do,
just
go AWOL again.
Is he in the Pacific, jumps off a boat, swims ashore somewhere in the Pacific?
Okay.
Does he get himself sacked by doing something really bad?
Well,
maybe?
This is where he claims to be a naval surgeon. You said he was a naval surgeon at the start.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it feels like he's coming up on his next...
Okay. Does he steal the identity of the surgeon on board the ship and then become this guy?
Very good.
Okay. That's Hannah George, hold that thought because that is coming up.
I'm also going to hold the thought because I want to be right.
Drunk women solving crime.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
So Al is the closest. He fakes his own suicide.
Oh, damn.
I love this guy. My life is so humdrum.
There's nothing like hearing a comment.
I've literally flown around the world at one point as a result of work, but I haven't faked my own death whilst pretending to be a naval surgeon.
You've got so much time, though.
I know, this is quite true.
Yeah.
And if we could be the reason for like your next big stretch of success, that'd be great.
TikTok, life is ticking away. Maybe the time to jump off a naval ship. Anyway, carry on.
Yeah. You've got to do what's important for you.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Women get a biological clock and men get the con clock. Like, it's almost time to pretend you're somebody else. Wasting your life.
We've only got a certain amount of years to do good cons. Right. Now, he takes on a new name. Now he's Robert Linton French, and he became a religion-orientated psychologist who taught psychology at Gannon College, which is now a university in Erie, Pennsylvania.
Go Steelers!
Go Steelers! And he sort of carries on with this type of stuff for a bit. So he served as an instructor in St. Martin's College, which is now a university in the state of Washington. And it is here, when he's teaching, that the FBI catch up with him and capture him. So my question is, what is he arrested for?
Tax evasion.
Tax evasion?
Well, it's got to be something federal, isn't it? It's got to go across...
For the FBI.
If the FBI are involved, it's got to be something, a federal crime. You know, they famously, that's how they take down Al Capone, isn't it?
Yes. This is all good. Any advance, you guys?
Okay, so it might be something kind of a bit on the boring side that he's working at this university.
He's working as a teacher at a university.
But he doesn't have the qualifications to be doing this, right?
Hold on a minute. We've only done 4 of the 9 million jobs, and he's already been arrested as a teacher. So there's stuff to come after this, right?
There is stuff that comes after this, but everything that he could possibly be arrested for at this point, I have already told you.
The post-FBI years, this is great.
Well, desertion then. Like going over.
Yes, it is desertion.
Okay.
Ah, okay.
Good stuff.
So he is arrested for desertion. He served 18 months at the Naval Disciplinary Barracks in San Pedro, California. Right. And then after his release, he assumed another fake identity and studied law at night at Northeastern University. And then he joined the Brothers of Christian Instruction in Maine, which is a Roman Catholic order. And then he borrows or nicks the name of a young Canadian doctor, Hannah George. Not Hannah George, just to your point.
Dr. Hannah George. Sounds good and very unlikely.
Of his acquaintance, this guy's called Dr. Joseph, I want to say Sire. His name is C-Y-R. Sire? Sire? Sire.
Sire?
Sire.
Sire?
Sire.
Sire. I don't know.
Sire.
It's Dr. Joseph Sire.
Dr. C. Call him that.
Yeah. I love the idea of him going like, he's stolen this name and going, hi, Dr. Sire, Sire.
How would you say my name?
I don't know. Yeah.
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 How would you pronounce your name? I don't know.
I've only seen it written. he's like, I like your name, I'll have that. Now, this leads to his most famous exploit. This is the money shot, you guys. He's pretending to be a naval surgeon. So Fred, as Dr. Joseph, Dr. C, is off to the Korean War, and he's masquerading as a trauma surgeon on a Canadian destroyer boat. Al Murray will know this, but fact fans, for everyone else, the Korean War was a war between North Korea and South Korea from the 25th of June, 1950
to
the 27th.
I MASH.
But not all listeners will know. So that war ended in July 1953.
Oh, no, it never ended. It's still not ended. It's a ceasefire. It's still going on.
Yes. Okay.
Strictly speaking, on pause, and the North Korean government is entirely geared to the idea that they're still at war.
Yeah.
Thank you, because you just spared us like what would be probably a 5-star review on iTunes, but with that, just so you know, like we get a lot of nice advice, and it's like just so you guys know.
Yeah. We're in the 50s. Now, he's in this war. One day, when he's pretending to be a doctor, 16 combat casualties are brought to the ship.
No.
Oh, Christ.
Yes.
He's not really going to
operate.
Okay,
let's get there. These men need major surgery or they will die. He is the only quote-unquote surgeon there. Question, what does fake Dr. Fred do?
I bet he goes for it.
Goes for it, does surgery.
It's going to be, I bet you haven't seen this film, niche reference, Spies Like Us, anybody?
Oh, God, I remember that film, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's ancient, but there's a scene where they're masquerading as doctors and they're like, I will now. And then he leans under the table and he reads the book really fast. And then he almost gets to it. So I bet he just goes for it and he has like a book.
Okay. Lovely answer, Taylor Glenn. Any advance, you guys?
I think Taylor's completely right.
Okay.
I think he styles it out. He relies on the super experienced people around him. You know what to do, Perkins. Crack on.
Okay, yeah.
Ooh. But bearing in mind, he like faked his own suicide when he got a bit bored of not having a corner office on a boat. Yeah. I kind of, part of me thinks like, is he kind of...
Does he fake a heart attack?
Oh, that's right, a good way of getting out of things.
I wish I could help. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Oh, damn. I better lie down.
In the morning, I want sausage and bacon.
Just remember.
Okay, well, great instincts, you guys. He does surgery. He orders everyone to be brought to the operating room and prep for surgery. Meanwhile, he speed read some of the medical textbooks about the various surgeries he was now forced to perform.
Super high IQ, remember?
Super high IQ and photographic memory. So he's doing major chest surgery. He's taking out bullets. Question, did these operations go well?
Yes.
Yes, from Al.
Yes.
Do you know what? I think at least a few of them. I think his hit rate was possibly... What did you say? There were 16 casualties.
16 casualties.
I think it would be something like maybe half of them. I think like 8 went well, 8 died. You're not going to save everyone anyway.
Right.
So he obviously carries on with this kind of crazy conmanship. So yeah, I think
this
maybe
is
half.
It. If you're going to pretend to be a doctor, this is the perfect place to do it because... You know, casualties come in, you know that it's going to be, like Hannah said, 50-50 at best. You're going to be doing messy surgery anyway because you're taking out bullets and stuff and then just sewing up wounds. Look, I feel like I could do it now.
Yeah,
I've had some
I
wine.
I think he wins the Congressional Medal of Honor. You know, I think he completely gets away with it.
Okay, so Al, super successful. You guys, half and half.
Hmm.
Just because of like this, the odds are like you win some, you lose some.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I could call the. I'm going to say 3 people died and the rest live.
I'm Team Fred.
Team all Fred. Right. You think like 100% they all survived?
100%.
Fuck you guys, hell. Al has it.
No!
Yeah. He operated successfully on all 16 men. None of the casualties died as a result of his surgeries.
Oh my God.
They died of everything else.
Yeah, they died minutes later, but it
was... 5 died in a car crash. No,
I was going to say, are we counting the infections that happen like 3 weeks later? Is this like a...
Honestly, it's incredible, but
that's
you might
nuts.
Say it went a little too well. He doesn't get a Congressional Medal of Honor, but the story gets to the newspapers. So the removal of a bullet from a wounded man ended up in Canadian newspapers. And the trouble with that is that people read newspapers. And one person in particular...
In Canada, anyway.
Burn on America. So one person in particular reading the reports was the mother of the real Dr. C.
Oh, shit.
And her son at the time...
Does she know how to pronounce her surname?
Yeah, she can help us all out.
She goes, hang on a minute. That's not how we say it.
Yeah. God, these people know nothing. She knows.
That's not
that
the boy I've been bragging about to the neighbors.
Well, also, she knows that he's not in career because he's actually practicing medicine in Grand Falls, New Brunswick.
Yeah.
When news of the imposter reached the destroyer ship that Fred is on, the captain, James Plomer, at first refused to believe that he wasn't a surgeon and who he says he was. Question, once they accept that he's an imposter, does the Canadian Navy press charges against
no.
him? No. No from Al.
No.
Al has been so right for so many questions that
and
I'm tempted to go
straight in.
No,
as well.
I just think no, because what you're dealing with here is men at war.
Yeah.
And they'll find a way to let it slip through the cracks because he saved a load of guys' lives.
Yeah.
That's my gut instinct. And also, the thing about the Korean War is everyone who's been in the Korean War, all the officers in the Korean War, are Second World War veterans, so they've been doing this a really long time.
Okay.
And they're really over it. They're really over sort of bullshit. And they probably think, as long as he's moved off my ship, whatever.
Yeah,
that's my
gut.
That's my gut instinct. I might be wrong, but that's my gut.
No, that's good intel. I like that.
Yeah.
So the doctor is Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
Was this a Canadian ship, though?
Yes, it was. He's in
I'm
the
sorry,
Canadian.
This is a detail that you probably said a long time ago.
I did say it, but yeah.
They might not because of just embarrassment that nobody clocked.
But he's an American as well, isn't he?
Yeah, he's American.
So maybe they can't do anything about him.
Or maybe they can't.
Yeah, maybe it's too difficult because then you're starting a fight with another country that you're supposed to be friends with. Or...
Isn't it a PR nightmare even then, yeah, though, to be like, hey, we didn't know this was the real Dr. Sir Kurt. You know how to say it. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Something
a little bit like, oh.
It is interesting, yeah, that guy's, the captain's initial reaction was to be like, no, this is definitely the guy. It's definitely,
yeah,
the guy.
He's 100% a doctor.
So, yeah, I think that may be that thing of not wanting to admit they were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. We run a tight ship, but not that tight.
Okay. Great instincts. They don't press charges. They are too embarrassed of having allowed an imposter.
I didn't factor embarrassment in.
I always factor embarrassment in, and I'm like, who's embarrassed in this scenario? And I'll tell you what's going to happen. I know shame.
Yeah, so he was quietly dismissed from the Royal Canadian Navy and forced to return to the United States. Fun fact, there is a MASH episode that is supposedly about these exploits. Oh. A one-time character, Captain Adam Casey, who performed several surgeries but turns out not to be a real surgeon.
Oh, my God. See, I knew.
This happens in medicine a lot, doesn't it? It's the people who say, yeah, they're doctors, say what they're doing, and it turns out there was a hospital porter, wasn't there? I think in the 90s, some bloke who got rumbled and he'd been doing surgeries and he wasn't.
God,
surgeon.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, do you know what? There was a guy on the Isle of Wight. This was in the papers. But, sorry to bring it back.
He just laughs every time you say Isle of Wight.
It's glorious. Go on.
But he bought his just own ambulance.
Can we just change this to an episode about the Isle of Wight?
I mean, most episodes sort of turn into
they
that.
They do end
okay,
up, yeah.
Fine.
We're pretty sure she gets kickbacks if she mentions it. Like, oh,
yeah, she's not sharing any of her
Isle
of Wight.
Yeah. Yeah.
All of that bunks with us.
Yeah, brilliant. You're making us sound really strange and unique. Carry on.
But no, this guy bought an ambulance, like an old ambulance, and then listened to shouts, and he would go to the shouts before the ambulance could get there.
Ooh, that's
and,
so
and
creepy.
That's not unusual. Like, it's not just an Isle of Wight thing, like, yeah, believe it or not. But yeah.
But people have left the Isle of Wight to do that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're all over now.
Southampton, there was a woman in Southampton who used to do it, I heard.
Right. Loads of expats.
It's
but it is fascinating. The medical thing of people wanting to play God and thinking
it's a bit weird. I'll talk real quick about his philosophy about all his impersonations. I was going to say impersonizations, but that
of course
was...
Americans say impersonogens.
Could you please say impersonizations? Because that, I think, is actually the right word.
We gotta jazz up impersonations.
Impersonizations is a better word than impersonations.
Thank you.
It's like an even more abstract noun.
He had two cardinal
runes.
Yeah.
Cardinal runes.
This isn't good. I should be able to talk.
Cardinal runes.
Two cardinal rules. Number one.
It's like, Catholics have runes? You kind of do, right?
Go into everything.
It's a Viking cardinal. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
Rule number one, the burden of proof is on the accuser.
Yeah.
And rule number two, when in danger, attack.
Wow.
And he also said that he was successful in his roles because he was able to fit into positions which no one else had previously occupied. There's a biography about him. And so he said specifically about this is you can pick up loose power without alienating anyone, never encroach upon anyone else's domain. So there's like a power vacuum. So he said, if you come into a new situation, don't join some other professor's committee and try and make your mark by moving up in that committee. You'll have a long haul and make an enemy. So he'd like form his own committee. That way there's no competition, no past standards to measure you by. And how can anyone tell that you aren't running a good outfit? And then
he's like a fun sociopath. He's adorable.
Yes,
That's pretty cute, isn't it? I mean, obviously he used his experience of being a monk. And so if he had to go anywhere where there was religion, he could just walk in the door, couldn't he?
And talk
credibly to other religious people in a religion. He knew their grammar, didn't he? So he could...
Yeah, he had authority in that area.
Yeah, manoeuvre in that area quite easily. And also, if you're in a monastery, you know perfectly well that what you have to do is, if you set your own thing up, that is very, very, very good. That's very canny, isn't it?
It's canny. Mm. It's an excellent life hack for anyone that wants to be a con man. or get ahead at work.
Or close that pay gap.
Or even want a quiet life. I mean, set up a committee that you run and no one cares about. I mean, it sounds quite desirable.
I think loose women should also rebrand to loose power.
Loose power, that's such an interesting, because there's all, you know, we talk about soft power, don't we?
Yeah.
The idea of soft power is like, I don't know, films in English, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which means two British films a year get watched by anyone globally. But like loose power is it's sort of better, isn't it? That's like...
Yeah.
Loose power is sexier than soft power.
It is sexier. It's flopping around. Anyone could grab it. I don't know what.
Loose power sounds up for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Soft power really does not sound like it is going to get anywhere.
There's no orgies for soft power.
No.
And that is the pull quote for this episode.
Loose power was asking for it.
I'm gonna whiz through some of the stuff he did. He founded a college, obviously following his own advice, while he was pretending to be Brother John Payne of the Christian Brothers Instruction.
Yeah.
And he got the college chartered by the state. And then, get this, he leaves that college because they offended him by not naming him as rector or chancellor of the new college, and he thought they chose a rubbish name. This guy has some weird ego stuff going on, because he left the medic job because he didn't feel like they gave him a good enough job as well.
Con man. That's an interesting concept, isn't
he? He's a proud con man. He gets pissed off that he's not being treated right, and he just storms off.
This is what's fascinating about him, though, and the way he described that. He doesn't want to be at the top of the food chain.
Yeah.
And he'll accept that people can overpower him.
Yeah.
And he almost thrives on the resentment of like, well, they did me wrong.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So he can still have that.
Gosh, yeah, amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting.
The psychology of him is...
I still think he's a prick, but he's interesting.
He's an interesting prick.
I would have dated him. If we had gone to uni together, I would have dated
100%,
him.
100%. I could have changed him 100%.
No, Hannah, I would have changed
him. No, the thing is, he'd have changed both of you with different names.
Yeah.
You'd have discovered later on in life you were dating the same bloke.
Yeah,
you
dated the same guy.
No, Hannah, I dated Seer. Well, I dated Sire.
I dated Brother Payne. Like, what was his name? Like, Brother something Payne.
Do you know what?
That's a baller name at that point.
Yeah. I once found out that I dated someone who my friend had dated, but like afterwards, I became her friend afterwards, and we were like, oh my God, yeah, him. And then we realized he cooked us both the same meal. So we obviously had one meal.
Oh.
Anyway. Wait, is that a euphemism? Oh, no, it was a meal. Okay.
and the meal failed in both instances.
Well, yeah, we ain't married to him.
Yeah, exactly. That's precisely the point I was trying to make. Yeah.
The bolognese always works.
I need to know what the meal was. I'm sorry. I need to know what the meal was,
it was
please.
Pasta. There was pine nuts. Pasta. There's pasta and pine nuts.
Oh, fuck him. Fuck him. He's a wimp. Pine nuts. If there's pine nuts with pasta, just fucking walk out the door, ladies. That's all I'm saying.
It sounds like a bit of a sex pesto, am I right? Hey. So it's a terrible pun, but I'm pretty sure pine nuts are in pesto.
They are. Yeah, because my cousin can't have them. Anyway, right.
Rounded out the joke really well. That
you know what?
Good.
I mean, he's got to have anaphylactic shock on his Tinder profile, surely. Do not date me if you have anaphylactic shock.
Yeah, I've got one meal.
I've got one meal. It's got nuts in it.
Yeah. And I don't mean my... Anyway.
Dating tagline. I've got one meal.
I mean, it's Henry VIII, isn't it? Cooking one meal. Six times.
That college is still going, blah, blah, blah. Okay.
What?
Is it?
Yes. Okay, so the college that, it's a real college now. He got it accredited.
Jesus.
Lemenius College in Alfred, Maine, began in 1951, and then he left. In 1959, it moved to Canton, Ohio, and in 1960, it became Walsh College, now Walsh University. So it still exists. So he started and then he stormed off because they didn't treat him nice.
God, dare to dream, people. Honestly.
It's amazing. So
or dare
during
to
the
con,
50s.
You know?
Yeah. The sky's the limit unless you've got a very fragile ego. During the 50s, Fred began to find it harder to pull off his various aliases. Question, why do you think that might be?
Press.
Press? So
yeah, people know who he is by now, right?
So fame, recognisable, yeah, press.
I think so.
Okay. Hannah, anything to add?
I feel like he was ready to settle down, maybe. And I was like, this is genuinely...
With me.
He met Hannah and he was like, or Taylor. And he was like... I mean, female workplace.
Thanks, Katie.
I like to think that it's because he, like, yeah, he got to a kind of like the age where he wanted kids.
Well,
and
so the,
a great
in the
dad.
50s, he's in the 50s, he's in his 30s, right?
Yeah.
So you know, we talked about the biological clock a minute ago. Maybe. Yeah. But so that's how a man sees it. That the hour we've been talking is only a minute in on biological clock terms. Whatever, I can't tell. I don't know. Maybe that's it. Maybe he family had commitments.
Well, the answer is in fact fame. So he had sold his story to Life magazine, and he was recognisable. And my
what,
source
donut?
Is going. I mean, actually,
first
what kind
rule
of con
of con club.
You do not self-publicise Con Club.
Exactly. Don't talk to Life magazine.
Well, this is it.
Can I just say that donut is my favourite British insult of all, and you guys have the best insults in the world.
You know what? I worked on a thing a really long time, about 15 years ago in the US. It came to nothing, but basically it's the pub landlord moves to America, blah, blah, blah. And we're like, there's a lot of stuff ago where I wanted him to either call people Muppets or Donuts. Yeah. And the showrunner,
too adorable.
And the showrunner's going, why would you call anyone a donut as an insult? You know, Americans love donuts.
Yeah.
But it's like you're donut. Like it doesn't mean it's just like it sounds great, right? And he's going. And people love Muppets. People really love Muppets.
Yeah.
People love the Muppets.
Wow,
show.
I hate this showrunner. I hope that he's not doing well.
I know he's doing fine now. I think, you know.
But he was technically correct for the American market.
He was absolutely right. And, you know, the thing he then wrote for me was rubbish. So, you know, swings and roundabouts.
I remember seeing
that's exactly why it's the best insult.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I hate. But that, there's that irony thing that Americans have trouble with.
And also,
so
then Americans would have to learn, like, how it's a fun insult.
Yeah.
They love Bake Off now. Then they could learn to love donut as an insult.
Oh, yeah, we're on our way. Donut will be the new insult in the next 10 years.
Yeah, but it'll go wrong. They go, you, Victoria Sponge. Like, no, donut.
You, Eclair. Hannah, you were going to say something.
Oh, no. It's very lowbrow. It was just, I think it was an episode of Gordon Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares where a chef was shouting at somebody and just said, "You fucking blowjob."
The American said it.
Yeah, he said it to one of his staff members.
Oh,
I think,
wow.
"You fucking blowjob."
That is great.
Weird insult. But sorry, Katie, we've derailed you with donuts and
blowjobs. That's insulting someone with an aspiration. I mean,
But Hannah, Americans like blowjobs.
Yes.
Right?
Makes no sense. That makes me so angry. You could do that with so many insults.
Yeah.
You cunt. People like cunts. Anyway.
That would be great if that was the rule about what you're allowed to say on TV.
If people like it.
Got a real big sub, like it's a real cult fan club here. You've got to be able to say this. So, Fred sold his story to Life magazine and he was recognisable. And my sources go a bit personal here. He gets described as a man of increasing girth. Even back in Korea, he was bigger than all the other soldiers. So he stood out more at this time. And also he kept doing TV bits. In 1959, he was on a game show called Take a Good Look, where three celebrity panelists had to guess his identity. So it's good to know that Would I Lie to You have nicked that from the 50s. He was on a TV quiz show called You Bet Your Life with Groucho Marx.
Yeah.
And
wow.
Do you guys know this?
Yeah. No, I know the show.
Oh, cool. And he won $1,000 and he said he was going to donate it to the Feed and Clothe Fred DeMara Fund.
And then put it in his bank account.
I mean, he could have actually done something good in that moment, but I have a feeling he doesn't turn towards philanthropy at any point.
He is not good with money. He played a doctor in a horror film called The Hypnotic Eye, but he keeps getting busted. So he tries to do other aliases. So he tried to work in a prison for a bit in Huntsville, Texas, but a prisoner recognized him from Life magazine. And I just think it's a bit on the nose to have that magazine in a prison.
Yeah, is that only some prisoners are allowed to read it? Yeah, right.
Also, like, I love the point that he's obviously, like, so bad with money. He's got no money. He's had to get a fucking job as a prison warden. He's like, it's another con. It's another con.
It's just a fucking job at that point. It's just a sort of a job, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you can't he's call in a diner.
Wink. Yeah. Where are my tips?
I'm where are my tips? Like, yeah. In the 60s, he tries to do more Bible mission rescue stuff in Los Angeles, and he's a counselor, and then he's in a Baptist church in Oregon.
And he's got some funny religious stuff going on too.
He's got he does.
He knows how to work it though. It's I would imagine if you,
of course,
if you knew your way halfway round some of that stuff, it'd be really easy to work that.
Yeah, there's a lot you can do with that. Actually, it's true.
I guess. I guess it opens up so many forums, but it's just interesting how he keeps coming back.
Keeps going back to it. And he's quite well liked. He's obviously quite charming because, like, everyone will like him, but then all these rumors will surface of his old life and he'll have to quit. So just sort of keeps doing that. He moves to Washington. He's a bus driver for a bit. Then he's a guest on the Tom Snyder show.
Being a bus driver is not a con, though, right?
It's not a con, but, like, he's like, no, I'm just pretending to be a bus driver for the paycheck.
But you're actually driving the bus.
I'm so radical.
And getting paid.
Yeah. Oh,
he can't drive a bus.
Yeah, I'm so crazy at this point. He's best mates with Steve McQueen, and then he gets a job.
What?
Honestly, that isn't entirely explained, but we will come back to it. But he's obviously met him for all the TV stuff. He gets a job as a chaplain in California and he gets found out and is forced to quit. But the chief of staff is like, just loves him so much that, like, he doesn't have to quit in the end. So he vouches for him and he's allowed to stay as the chaplain. So he's this very active and appreciated minister serving a variety of patients in the hospital. And so loads of people don't know about his past. And he's very popular. Like, he runs out of money and then this guy just lets him live there in the hospital as well. Fun fact for you guys, he administered the last rites to actor Steve McQueen when he died in 1980.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
That's weird.
Fred himself died in 1982, age 60, with issues relating to diabetes and heart failure. He'd already had, like, his legs amputated and stuff.
He's enormous.
Fred was not conning his way into any self-care. Yeah.
So there's a book and a film, like, so the book, 1960, The Great Imposter, written by Robert Crichton, and then the New York Times, that was a New York Times bestseller, and then it was adapted into a 1961 film of the same name starring Tony Curtis. So I guess let's raise a glass to having a photographic memory.
I want to hear more about that, like, bus driver shit.
All I can picture is Otto from The Simpsons. That's all I can do.
Drunk women solving crime.
So we will now quickly discuss a listener crime. Mm-hmm. And this has been sent to us from New Zealand. This is from James. He says, I have a box that contains a couple of items that my father found sometime in the 1960s. The items are some coins and some bones. He found them in the middle of a desert in southern Iraq. The bones were found to be from a human hand. The coins are Roman, dated from approximately 400 AD.
Fucking hell.
Right? That's all the info I have. The most likely theory is that a Roman soldier was returning from one of the Roman-Persian wars and either died of natural causes or was attacked. I'm sure you can speculate many feasible scenarios that could result in a dead man's hand full of coins in a desert. P.S. I absolutely love the podcast. You gals have got me through many tough days.
Thanks. Whoa, I have more questions than answers.
I know. Isn't this this is a brilliant thing.
Left hand or right hand? That's my first thought.
Ooh, it's just human hands. We don't have that information.
Do we know? We don't know that the bones date back as long as the Roman coins, because it could be a modern hand.
Because also, it could be, maybe somebody was robbed, maybe their hand was cut off and the hand fell with the coins and then the rest of the fight carried on, but this hand got buried or something.
And the box, like, what kind of box?
Oh, well, I think they've put it in a box. Did they put it in a box?
Oh, yeah, so I think it's
But if he found them together, what makes it... Like, is he on a dig? Also, isn't this how The Exorcist starts?
Yeah.
It's like the first 20 minutes.
Yeah,
do you think,
yeah.
I'd like to know, James, I would like to know, does your dad have any friends with one hand? Because part of me thinks the Roman, like, coins are there to throw everyone off. Yeah. And he and his mate maybe accidentally cut off his hand one day. You know, they were having a laugh and the hand comes off and they're just like...
Or we're talking worst wank in the world.
It's another pull quote for the episode.
Sorry.
No,
that's good.
I actually want more details on that, Al. So where did the coins come in?
No, I'm just leaving it hanging.
Just to leave it there. Okay. Leave it there.
Worst bank in the world.
Yeah. Well, James, I hope that's helped.
I feel like we solved that.
I also feel like I was like fourth or fifth to that idea, but then all of you thought, no, I'm going to... I'll leave it to someone else. And it hung heavy, and then I thought, all right, I'll step up.
And you did it proud. You did
step
it proud.
Step up and say it if you insist.
Take it for the team.
Yeah,
is that where you asked if it's the right hand or the left hand? You're like, I'm going to ask the wanking question. But
that's exactly why I asked which hand it was.
Sometimes you vary it up, though, just for a challenge. Mm.
It's good. See, like, I've drunk enough tequila that subtlety is absolutely lost on me.
I wonder what it'd be like if I chopped my other hand off. I'm just taking the idea of, you know, lying on one arm and all that.
Yeah, the dead arm.
The dead arm thing. To full extreme, isn't it?
Yeah.
And although, he's got his lucky wanking coins with him. Kind of like, bring it all together.
I mean, for enhanced pleasure, chopping your hand off at the moment of crisis.
Favourite Roman goddess. Favourite Roman goddess.
We know the Romans were horny.
Oh, my goodness me, were they horny. They're like the horniest people ever.
I mean, it doesn't matter. Was it a modern wanker? Was it an ancient wanker? It doesn't matter. It all comes back to wanking, and we've solved it. James, you're welcome. Yeah.
Thank you, James. All right. It just remains for us to ask Al Murray, what are you up to?
I'm sorry. I completely...
It's perfect.
We're so happy.
Well, yeah. What am I up to? Wank jokes. No, I'm sort of doing this strange thing of mopping up the tour I was meant to do in March last year at the moment.
Oh, so
that's
my main
activity. And then I'm supposed to be writing a book that I haven't... I found writing really difficult during that, darling. You know, like...
Yeah.
All the usual stimulus is gone. Anyway, but I'm...
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm finishing off a tour, and then I go on tour next year, and I've just made a television programme that I'm not allowed to talk about.
Well, are you sure? Because I've seen some press about it on the internet.
So have I.
It was on Chortle.
You see, I don't know. I just don't know. And what's been really funny about it is when you're making a programme, the people in it go, when's this on? You go, don't ask me. I have no fucking idea. I'm the last person you should ask. And my wife works in TV listings, right?
Ah.
And she goes, oh, you're on telly on Wednesday.
All right.
I had no idea. She goes, oh, it starts in 3 weeks' time. Will you do an exclusive interview? I'm like, well, all right, what do you want to know? But so I've done that. And then I was doing a podcast before lockdown, but I've been doing a podcast with a guy called James Holland, who's a Second World War historian, and about the Second World War, which is the thing I'm interested in.
Yeah.
One of the things I'm interested in. And that sort of blossomed during the pandemic.
Yeah.
You know, because it's an ill wind and all that that blows no one any good. In the middle of September, we did an actual 3-day festival in a field near Buckingham.
Oh, wow.
With tanks and 1,000 people.
Oh, amazing.
And speakers. And we had this guy whose name is Nicholas Frank. He's in his 80s. And his father was a guy called Hans Frank, who was Hitler's lawyer. Who was the Gauleiter for what they called the general government. So ran the biggest province in conquered Poland.
Fucking hell. Wow.
They lived in a castle. His mother and father hated each other. She had lots of lovers, but she stuck with him and all that. And he sat down and talked about growing up with that legacy.
Wow.
His father's a mass murderer, you know.
Responsible
for the deaths of millions of people. And he sat down at this festival and talked about that legacy.
Oh,
talked gosh. About what it means to be that person.
Amazing.
Which was truly incredible. This is the weird thing. When I started doing this podcast, it was the two of us in my kitchen, me going, what about that tank? I like that tank. And then he's in the story, and so he'll tell me. And then I go, what about the tank? And he'll tell me. And it's turned into this thing.
Yeah. Can we listen to that? Did you record?
It's called, we're going to be putting that out. So it's called We Have Ways of Making You Talk, is the name of the podcast.
And so we can hear that old guy talking about the legacy.
Hans will be on in the next couple of months. We're a German historian, a woman called Katja Hoyer, who's really, she grew up in the DDR and now lives in England. Her whole thing is everything you've heard about German history comes from West Germany. I grew up in a communist country. That suddenly ceased to exist. And so she's so interesting about all of it. She told this story about a guy who was a communist in Nazi Germany. So when the Nazis get in, he flees to Russia to go to the Soviet Union. He gets there and all his letters home are like, oh my God, the coffee's shit. And and the food's terrible and there's no work because I'm German and it's not a worker's paradise. And then the Russians are reading his mail, so they arrest him and put him in prison. Put in prison for hanging shit on the Soviet Union. And then the Nazis do a deal. You know, the Nazi-Soviet pact happens. So the Nazis...
They get him back.
So he goes back to Germany. And then the Germans declare war on the Soviets. So he's a communist. He's a criminal again.
Okay.
So he goes into prison for being a communist again. And then he's told, if you join the army... If you join the army, that's all right. So he joins the army and goes to fight on the Eastern Front. Is captured by the Russians.
Oh, right? My God.
Who go, well, hold on a minute. You're a German. And also, you're on our files. And you're like a... You're one of those communist fake communists who sent to spy on us in the 30s. So they gulag him.
Oh, no.
Shit.
But eventually gets back to Germany in 1955.
Wow.
And no one wants anything to do with him. Goes back to West Germany, which is wrong. No one wants anything to do with him because he's a communist. Right?
So,
so he spends basically 20 years in and out of prison.
Jesus.
Because the wind kept changing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And he
I'm sorry, but this is a musical. Yeah. That's where my head went. It went there.
Because he starts out as a complete believer in communism.
Yeah.
And then...
Yes.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
Really sad. It's a poor soul.
Wow. Oh, it's incredible. So we can listen to that too on the podcast.
Yeah, that'll be on the podcast. That stuff will be on the podcast. So we had a weekend with a health and safety guy yelling at the tank bloke, going, your tank can't drive there, you'll run over the public. But that was all
and
fine.
It was worth it. It was totally worth it.
Oh, God, it was worth every second of it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that somewhere there's a health and safety guy that has got, like, bigger troubles than COVID. It's like, there's fucking tanks here. Like,
he was great. He's going, no one told me you were going to drive the three tanks into that field at that point. And why is there no one in high gears? And you're like, well, because it's a camouflage event, mate. Right. That's what's going on. So my touring stuff as a pub landlord, the podcast, and then sort of other odds and sods. But including a television program, I don't...
Sky
History.
Sky History. This all sounds absolutely awesome. So it just remains to say thank you so much, Al Murray.
Thank you, Al.
There's no wine left. Listen to that. The dog
is barking.
Hey, I'm sorry. That bark tells us that we're finished.
Thank you so much for having me.
Drunk Women Solving Crime is produced by Amanda Redman. Music by The Lion and the Wolf. If you would like to, you can follow us on Drunk Women Pod on Twitter. On Facebook and Insta, we are Drunk Women Solving Crime. And please review us on Apple Podcasts. And also, if you have a crime that you would like us to solve, write it on a review on Apple Podcasts as well. Thank you to Acast and thank you for listening. Bye!
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.